the Richmond Theater Critics Circle.
Curtain Call.
A discussion of all things theater with Richmond critics and occasional guests.
Welcome to Curtain Call, Act 3, Scene 17. I'm Jerry Williams from Sifter.
I'm Susie Hobbinstock from the Richmond Times-Dispatch.
I'm Julinda Lewis with RVA Art Review.
And I'm Claire Boswell with Style Weekly.
We're going to talk today first about The Normal Heart, which is playing at Richmond Triangle Players through May 12th. Real-life writer-activist Larry Kramer chronicles the seminal stages of HIV/AIDS in 80s New York City and the attempts to understand and combat this disease. Who wants to jump in first? Let's not say Claire, because she wasn't alive when this was all happening.
Well, I'll jump in first, since I was living in New York at the time this was happening, and it was a very personal production for me because it just brought back so many memories of people that I knew watching this production. It was very real. It was very genuine. It was very honest. People were crying real tears in the audience that night that I was there. I thought that it was one of the most touching productions that we've seen this season, and that people really do need to see it. It's not theater that's meant to entertain. It's about history. It's about real people.
I agree. I think the play is important because of the historical perspective it offers. And I felt like every monologue just went on a little too long. It's very ranty, which of course is Larry Kramer's style. George Boyd, who directed it, guided his cast. He kept it brisk when it needed to be, but allowed it to slow down sometimes when there were some emotional moments. Jim Morgan effectively did do those confrontational rants, and I thought most of the actors were good. Dawn Westbrook was very assured with her empathetic doctor, and Dan Simo, who of course added a little humor there, which we needed, and even some tenderness at some point.
That little bit of humor was very much needed.
Yes, because it's very heavy going.
To me, the big discovery was Jim Morgan in that lead role of Ned Weeks, because I had not seen him in anything before, and I thought he did a really, really good job with a real workhorse of a role, a big, big role.
I agree with that. I think Jim Morgan was the standout here. But I agree with everything you said, Jerry. All of those actors, I think, really brought the story to life. And it was a really sad story to watch. I was crying my eyes out at this production.
Wow. Let's just talk a minute about the set. Frank Foster designed this set that kind of looked like a giant, almost a hospital. I know, I think one of you mentioned in your review that it kind of was referencing maybe the baths from those days because it was very much tiles.
Yeah, I did.
Was that you?
Yes.
Okay, there you go. It made an impression.
I mean, it was the baths. It was a hospital. It even reminded me a bit of New York City subway. With all of that said, it was kind of ambiguous.
Yes.
I think it tried to touch on too many things, so it came out being nothing specific.
Yeah, and I thought the projections were just distracting. And, of course, there's always, for some reason, there seems to be that little light back there that never goes away that was right in my eyes.
Yeah, super annoying.
I liked the set. I thought it worked really well because it resembled all of these spaces that you guys are talking about. But also, I think, I don't know, I was alive in the 80s, Jerry, just so you know. For me, I thought the set was one of the strengths here. And the lighting, I think, was well done for this. What I really had a problem with was the sound design.
I knew you were going to say that. Yes.
I really hated that. There were these like sort of poignant dramatic moments, and then like Eye of the Tiger played.
Let me just say, it's Lucien Restivo, who usually does a wonderful job on sound design, but there were some very dramatic scenes, and suddenly you'd hear cars driving through, and it was supposed to give you the feeling that there was the ambient of outside, but they were on, you know, a high-rise building. You don't hear cars driving by from a high-rise perspective. It was a little distracting.
I think it undercut the drama. Yeah. Significantly.
Both the sound and the set tried too hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So overall, I think we're saying this is a very strong production that brings this very important subject to life.
And a great choice for that 25th anniversary season of Triangle Players.
All right. We've been talking about The Normal Heart, which is at Richmond Triangle Players through May 12th. Next, we're going to talk about River Diddy, which is a world premiere at Virginia Rep, on stage at the November Theater through May 6th. A brother and a sister escape their oppressive household and find solace in a shack in the forest.
The show was really interesting, and I feel like it was a great step toward something that should be really great in the future. I was taken by the fact that they're calling it a folk tale or a folk story, because I take it from that it's not supposed to be super realistic. Some of the characters seemed way over the line. Some seemed to fit right into a place that I could understand. And some characterizations I felt were way over the line. For instance, Katrina Carol Lewis playing Sunshine, she made sense to me as a character. Boston Christopher as a character to me was Snidely Whiplash. It was just a caricature. Yeah. And similarly, Scott Wichman, who played the character of Toe, he seemed like Gollum, nothing like a real person. A character who was out there but made sense to me was Harlan, the sort of
spectacular,
big galoot with a heart of gold. And that made sense to me, that characterization by Jonathan Brent Burgard. But two of the other characters, the character Arlo, played by Matt Polson, was an outsider, and he wanted to make stories about imaginary creatures and teddy bears and things like that. I mean, it's a lot of weight to carry. And similarly, the character that Alexander Sapp played, Owen, is not only a sheriff and not only a sort of a hoot and holler, happy drunk, but he's also an artist. It's a lot to put on one character, so it makes it just that much less easy to swallow for me.
Yeah, and going back to the Arlo, Arlo's character was kind of ambiguous in a way, because not only was he the one who was sensitive and in need of care, but he was also the one who was trying to play the big brother role, who was taking care of his sister at the same time. And it was kind of difficult to reconcile those two things in some instances.
I'm going to talk a little bit about the staging first. I thought one thing I did like, the fact that director Nathaniel Shaw kept it simple. He didn't do any kind of fancy, flashy stuff. It was a pretty straightforward show, as the play kind of is. There's not a lot of flashy theatrics in the script itself. I liked some of the performances. I thought Alexander Sapp was sweetly amusing and wonderful. And like you mentioned, Jonathan Brent Burgard as Harlan was an imposing stage presence. He was very funny when he needed to be, and when he had some serious moments, he was very touching. I think we all agree that the play was too long. It was 3 hours. I know the writer was previously a poet, or is still a poet, I guess, and I think he was too in love with his words. I think this play could easily be cut 30 minutes. There was a lot of confusion about the relationships in the play. I mentioned in my review that the character that Katrina Carol Lewis plays, I wasn't sure if it was colorblind casting or if she was supposed to be black, because it was 35 to 40 minutes before there was any reference. And we're in Arkansas with a bunch of hicks in the 1800s. Somebody would have said something about that. So that was one of my complaints. And Jolinda, you had some other...
Yeah, someone did say something about it, but it was kind of subtle. I mean, I think it probably would have been a lot more outright. At
Absolutely.
The time, they came from New Orleans, where that would have been much more acceptable. You had a whole different class system, and still do, in some places in New Orleans. So her character was meant to be not especially black, but she was biracial.
Right.
I mean, they did explain her whole history.
But then there was the whole confusion with who was going to marry who and all that.
There was a program note, which I did read, fortunately, before the play started, which had a lot of information about some of the racial politics in New Orleans and some of the male power politics in New Orleans. And it said that a man with privilege could have multiple families, and there were various forms under which that could happen. But it was still unclear to me how it was that he seemed to be married to his wife, a white woman, and he seemed to be getting ready to marry his foster daughter, Sunshine, a mixed race person. How many marriages was he going to have? If you read the program notes, you might have bought it.
And
but you shouldn't have to read the program
exactly.
notes.
The play should stand alone.
Even if it was that a man of privilege was allowed to have this series of concubines and plaisage, Atticus Dye didn't appear to be a man of privilege. I mean, except in his own mind. I mean, he was like this struggling...
Bordello owner.
Yes, he owned the bordello.
I mean, I was trying to think of nice... You know, he owned a bordello. He, you know, he was a pimp.
I think there were some strong things in the performances. I think the direction was solid. I think we can all agree that it probably could have been 2 hours instead of 3 hours, and some of that clarification could have been straightened out. And surprisingly, since this thing has been in workshop for 2 years, I'm surprised some of this didn't come up sooner.
I thought it was 6 years.
6 years since the start, but I think they started workshopping it a couple of years ago, doing readings and stuff. Would we say it's still worth seeing because it's kind of an interesting attempt?
I think it's worth seeing, and I've heard people who have enjoyed it.
It's definitely worth seeing, and I think it's the kind of thing that you would enjoy if you're fine with a bit of ambiguity. If you like to have everything neatly tied up, you'd be very frustrated.
We have been talking about the world premiere of River Diddy, which is at Virginia Rep through May 6th. And that's going to do it for this week's Curtain Call. We want to thank Open Source RVA for hosting us on WRIR. We'll be back in 2 weeks to talk about appropriate and maybe a little surprise interview. I'm Jerry Williams from Sifter.
Susie Hobbinstock from the Richmond Times-Dispatch.
Julinda Lewis with RVA Art Review.
And Claire Boswell with Style Weekly.
For extended podcasts and complete reviews, visit the Richmond Theater Critics Circle website at artsies.org.